Hello, Mixnuts. Hello, listeners of Talk Nerdy to Me. You are listening to a special crossover episode between Talk Nerdy to Me and Nutty Bites. We're going to call this Nerdy Bites. And today we're going to be talking about the internet TV show? No, I guess an internet show sensation known as Ruby, R-W-B-Y. And we've got, of course, Nuke Choss and...
Hi, I'm Tech.
And...
Hi, I'm the guy who's going to probably take this over later through rants, but it's me, Jason.
You're not allowed to rant on this show. That's my job. I'm the ranty one.
Uh-oh.
Don't worry. We'll get into... I'm pretty sure we're going to get into a conversation about how awesome Jean is for about the next 40 minutes.
So who wants to give a little bit of backstory about what Ruby is and how it came to be?
Once upon a time, there was a guy named Monty Oom. Monty Oom worked for this company called Rooster Teeth. If that name doesn't make any sense to you, congratulations. Welcome to normal people. So Rooster Teeth is an animation studio. Among the many, many projects they do, they're very famous for a show called Red vs. Blue, which is a machinima production done inside the world of Halo. And it's all of these Master Chief characters stuck in this spy versus spy, red team versus blue team, wacky, zany adventures continue from there. 9 seasons in to this really funny show, Monty Oom starts to run out of steam, doesn't know what to do anymore. And the powers that be tell him, look, Monty, you finish this season and we'll greenlight whatever project you want. Really? Awesome. Okay, done. Bang. Bashes out 2 more seasons, and Red vs. Blue still going strong, and now we've got 2 seasons in the can of this amazing show called Ruby. So that's the backstory. So why is it spelled wrong, and what is it about? I hand over the baton.
That's fine. I'll take it. I can't really run on my trip, but it's fine. Ruby is an acronym. It stands for basically the 4 main characters who comprise up the team Ruby. And it is... It's Ruby Rose, Blake... I can't remember her last name.
Belladonna.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Blake, Belladonna, Yang, Ruby's sister, and Weiss. Each of these characters are from completely unique backgrounds. I mean, yes, Ruby and Yang are sisters, but they're not biological sisters, more like stepsisters.
Or adopted.
And they're both still very unique, like, in their origin, because Yang seems is a driven character. She's very aggressive, very... I don't want to say she's not brazen, but she's definitely no, like, she's not one of those, like, super bitchy characters, because that's totally Weiss when the series starts, which kind of turns into Blake later on as she gets more frustrated. But, you know, Ruby is kind of your ditzy character, but it's not played up in that way that really marginalizes women characters and stuff like this.
The trope name that I saw is they call her personality type adorkable.
She is quite adorkable. Yeah, I wouldn't say ditzy. I'd say she's the naive character, you know? The total innocent who hasn't really experienced much.
Very true. And it shows up a lot in this second season where she talks with her professor and he asks her why she's a hunter, why she wants to be a huntress. And she just kind of goes, I want to be a hero. Like, I want to save people. Like, and he just kind of looks at her like, really?
And she says, the other name for this type of character, they said was the little sister.
Mm.
And the thing that annoyed me was they said that, okay, she's the little sister character, which means she's cute, she's adorkable, but she's not a romantic lead, and you're not supposed to fall in love with this character, and there's nothing attractive about this character ever. It's your little sister. That's gross. What's wrong with you? Then it gives a list of other famous little sister trope characters that you're not supposed to be in love with. And, you know, I got a real big crush on Ruby. I really like her. She's so cute. And then it says, well, the other big little sister character is Tali from Mass Effect. And you're not supposed to like her either. It's like, oh, man, I got a big crush on her, too. She's so cute. So apparently there's something wrong with me.
Dude, no, trust me. It's not, because they try to say that that's the trope she falls into, but I don't think that's at all, because a lot of the times, if you've watched a lot of anime like I do, that little sister character a lot of the times needs to be protected. They're not very competent, and they don't seem to be very, like, stand up when it comes to situations and things that befall them, whereas Ruby has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that she is immensely capable and can kick some major ass.
30 seconds into episode one when she punches that dude in the dust shop.
Oh, yeah. Like,
she's wearing her headphones. Are you robbing this place? Yeah. Oh, punch.
Oh, it's great. Like, and that's one thing I will say about the show. There's no character. Yeah, there are tropes in this show, and because, you know, tropes aren't a bad thing as long as they're done well, but none of them in here are these paper thin, you know, just run of the mill characters. Everybody's unique, even the villains, even the bullies, the stereotypical group of guys who are arrogant and strut their stuff, chest all puffed out, they're still interesting characters, and we totally enjoy when they get their comeuppance, especially when my man John stands up to Oh Boy from Cardinal with the basically tracker jackers from the Hunger Games, their honey, and he has that awesome fight where we get to see the only romantic storyline in this whole show, really, between Jean and
Pyrrha?
Yes.
Yeah, Pyrrha Nikos, his teammate. I think it, I think I'll mention it now before we go any further, that one of the big reveals that they did during the lead up to the series with the release of the four different color teasers is that each of the main characters in this show is based on a different fairy tale. Not in any overt way, but in look and style and a little bit in personality, where and it all has to do with their color. So Ruby Rose is the color red. She is Little Red Riding Hood. She's always got the red hood on. Her sister Yang means sun in Chinese. Her color is yellow. She is Goldilocks. Blake is an old English way of saying black. Belladonna is a black flower. She is Beauty from Beauty and the Beast, and there's little hints as to who Beast is throughout the two seasons. Mm. And Weiss Schnee, that's German for white snow. She is Snow White. And
it's also reflected in their abilities. With Weiss's rapier, she typically it looks more or less like ice or snow when she's doing her casting her spells. And so forth.
Yeah, her glyphs are often subtle. Like snowflakes.
Yeah, it's all very subtle. It's really, really nice. Mm. Really, really, a really nice touch to that aspect of this show.
And it continues on with the other characters in the other teams, with the colors and the personalities, but they're nowhere near as obvious as they are for the members of Team Ruby. The next one that comes immediately to mind is Jeanne Arc.
Yes.
Which is a play on Joan of Arc, or Jeanne d'Arc in French. And Jaune is French for yellow, and his main color is yellow. And my poor boy Jean. Oh, Jean.
He's absolutely fabulous. He struts his stuff in that dress and this thing, and he holds up his end of that bargain. She totally forgot.
We all totally forgot. I had no idea what was going on when he walked out in a dress.
Wait, so where did that come from?
And he told her that she could have any guy that she wanted to go to the dance with, because they were probably all just beating down the door to ask her to the dance. And when he finds out that she doesn't have a date, she's like, you know, they're scared of her because she's the best student in the school. She's super tough. She's on the cereal box. Yeah, Pyrrha. And because he had made a bet beforehand when he told her that, you know, if she didn't get a date to the dance, he would wear a dress. And so when he found out she didn't have a date to the dance, he went and changed into the dress.
Yeah, I totally missed that.
Oh, dude, it was such a good thing. And I think everyone forgot about it. Like, I think because people are so used to characters in shows saying things like that, but never following through.
Yeah.
And I love the, they then break into the completely choreographed K-pop dance routine.
Hell yeah, son. That was their high school teen romance comedy type deal thing. They had to throw that in there. Like, all we needed was Usher in the DJ booth, right?
Well, one thing I want to talk about is how many nods to the genre of anime that this show has. And I think that's one of them.
Oh, it's absolutely all over the place, which is why a lot of people have dubbed this show anime. They put it in the genre of anime,
even though it's completely American and in no way Japanese.
Yeah, absolutely, it's not a Japanese cartoon at all, but they totally bite on a lot of the tropes, a lot of the sight gags, a lot of the emotional reactions to certain things, a lot of the speed off and, you know, kind of cartoony-esque things they do, a lot of their sighs, a lot of their exasperated actions are all straight out of anime. Like,
oh, there's nothing better than when one of the characters fights with Blake and they turn into a big puff of smoke with, like, the occasional limb sticking out of the cloud as they're fighting.
Yeah, dust tumble, yeah.
Yeah, with the occasional, like, big exclamation marks, Japanese characters. You hear, like, a cat yowl as they're fighting. I love that.
And then you've got things like every now and then they'll get the classic anime eyes expression. I think at one point we got the sweat drop, you know. Yeah. I mean, all of these very bold and blatant references. I've heard some people complain about, you know, they throw in too much comedy, like when they had to redecorate their dorm room.
I love that.
But I think it's perfect, and it weighs, it has a nice balance throughout the series.
When they redecorate their dorm room, this is another thing from the show that is very self-referential to other Rooster Teeth properties. The posters they're putting up in their room are other Rooster Teeth people. And it's the same thing at the season opener of season 2. The drink machines in the cafeteria, all the drinks that are mentioned on the labels are gags and jokes from other series.
I'm talking about kicking off the semester with a bang.
I always kick my semesters off with a yang. Eh? Guys? Am I right?
Man, I am so glad you brought up the opening to season 2, because I enjoyed the season 1 opener and the 4 referential trailers they put out before the show started, but I don't think anything can stand up to a knockdown, drag out, let's whoop each other,
yang,
food fight. Like, it was so good.
Thanks a lot, Jason. Now I have to edit this.
Whoops, I'm sorry. Hey, I have an explicit tag.
I do not.
You should. Especially with tech around.
So if you're listening to Nutty Bites and you want the swear words, go listen to Talk Nerdy to Me. That's nerdytomepodcast.com with the number 2.
Yep. And hey, the food fight, we'll say this, the food fight got you
turkey gauntlets.
Absolutely, turkey gauntlets.
And a watermelon hammer.
The watermelon hammer, the breadstick swords, the breadstick spear,
the sausage link whip.
Oh my gosh, that was great.
Yes, the grape drink tornado.
No, I love the season 2 opener. I think that fight scene, it's perfect. It gives you action and comedy, and it kind of sets things up. I like how the series is going, because, you know, they started with the trailer, so you get the idea of what the characters are like, except for Ruby. That's just a gun demonstration. And then you get the first season. Now, the first season was very frustrating for me, because you'd have like a 15-minute episode, be dying and waiting all week for the next episode, and then it's 3 minutes long. And the episode lengths were a lot more inconsistent than season 2.
Yeah, season 1 was a lot more of an experiment, I think, with the Monty Ilm and the rest of the Rooster Teeth staff really playing with the genre and sort of experimenting with how far they could take this and this gag and if anybody would bite. And it was a little rougher. Also, they had limitations with their software and rendering time and the number of animators that they had. So there were some neat stylistic touches that they did, whereas all of the background characters are just black silhouettes. You never see full-featured background characters. And at first you go, oh, what's with all the shadow people? And then you just sort of get into it that, okay, that's somebody not important that I'm not supposed to concentrate on. And it meshes really, really well. It's not annoying in any way.
I actually liked it. I thought that was a cool style.
I thought it was a good, a nice touch. But with season two, they had more staff. They had updates to their software and to their rendering capability. And we now have fully featured people in all the scenes. And it works.
If you go back and look at that first season basically had two fights. It had the introductory big awesome cool fight scenes, and then you didn't get another really big Mondo fight scene until the end with the awesome demon bird scorpion and all that stuff at the end, where you got to see all the teams working together to find their place, and that was really, really cool. But that was also indicative of the fact that they really didn't have a crew and they really didn't kind of have a budget with this. They were just kind of like, here's like you two dudes in a bag of chips, hope you can make it, right? Like, and he's like, fine, I got this. And
you know, all of the voice actors were already members of the Rooster Teeth staff.
Right.
Yeah. And you can also tell, like, they basically blew all of the majority of their budget on those four trailers. Because choreography in those trailers is fantastic. And I'm not sure changing that season one, because the choreography and the two major fights they had in that show were really, really good. But I point back to Yang's trailer in the bar where she fights the two girls in the dresses, and they're using classic kung fu martial arts movie style. One's using they're both using kicks, and they do the whole waggly leg thing, which is awesome. And you're just like, this is insanely out of like a Chinese action movie. Like it's they're tearing up the bar. I mean, the gang that she's fighting is basically the Axe Gang. Like, they're basically the Axe Gang.
Totally.
From Kung Fu Hustle.
Yes.
Yeah, it's great. It's absolutely fantastic. And the best part is they actually tie in all those trailers into the show. Because specifically, Yang goes back to that bar, and the bartender's like, oh, not you again. I just cleaned this place up. And it's absolutely great.
All except Weiss's trailer, because we haven't seen that giant knight yet.
That's, by the way, that's so good. I have that soundtrack, by the way. Again, Kim, the music in this show, it's fantastic. Oh, yeah. Super
Casey Lee Williams, I think her
no,
name
it's Jeff Williams, or...
Yeah, and...
Right, no, here. The vocalist.
Oh, the vocalist.
Yeah, it's her name's the, Casey the singer, something.
Yeah, Casey Williams, I think, something like that. Another thing about these trailers and about season one, and the thing that interested me, beyond the fact that it's, Sailor Moon with guns... one thing that I really, really liked about this was the mechanical animation. And I'll nerd for a second here.
Yeah, Casey Lee Williams, by the way.
Casey Lee Williams. Who's a brilliant vocalist, and the season two opening theme is fantastic.
I'm assuming she's somehow related to the composer, Jeff Williams.
I wouldn't put it past
daughter.
The fact. She might be... Daughter? Is it his daughter?
Yep.
Okay, so to continue, the mechanical...
And her mother was the other vocalist. Sorry.
Nice.
I will stop interrupting.
The mechanical animations are some of the most brilliant I have seen in any video, anime, game, anything short of something by, now I blanked on his name. Anyway, the guy that did Ghost in the Shell and all that stuff. That opening scene in Ruby's trailer when the scythe turns into a rifle, and the cross handle on the scythe is the bolt action that cycles the cannon, and there's physical recoil, and she drops the magazine and reloads, and then uses the recoil of the firing scythe to springboard through a crowd of werewolves, beheading them as she goes, going faster and faster and faster and faster. God, that was cool.
And here's the really awesome thing. They don't really recycle any of the tech they put in this thing. You have Ruby's snipe scythe, which is fantastic. It's...
Well, the name's Jeanne Arc. Short, sweet, rolls off the tongue. Ladies love it.
Do they?
They will. Well, I hope they will. I mean, my mom always says that. Never mind.
So, I got this thing.
Whoa! Is that a scythe?
It's also a customizable, high-impact sniper rifle.
A what?
It's also a gun.
Oh. That's cool.
So what do you got?
Oh, I got this sword.
Ooh.
Yeah, I've got a shield, too.
So what did they do?
Whoa, that's... The shield gets smaller, so when I get tired of carrying it, I can just put it away.
But wouldn't it weigh the same?
Yeah, it does.
It's probably the most iconic thing from the show. But then you also have Blake's...
shotgun gauntlets.
Yeah, you have Yang's shotgun gauntlets. You have Blake's kunai. It's basically a kunai whip chain. But she can also make it a pistol, she can make it a short sword, and it's a threefold weapon. It's great. Weiss has a very classical weapon, it's a rapier, but it rotates, and as it rotates, each different color represents a different style of magic, a different type of magic. And we really don't get to see her do much with that until season two, where it's the season finale episode, and she has that awesome fight on the train.
Right.
And she literally goes like Super Saiyan, bouncing all over the place using her sigils and runes, and it is awesome.
Another really interesting fact about Weiss's fighting style, and it took me like rewatching season two a couple of times to notice this. Go ahead and watch Weiss fight and realize she's left-handed.
Yeah.
And she's the only left-handed character. But she holds her sword in the other hand. And isn't that... Why would you bother doing that? Why would you bother making a left-handed character? Because it's an interesting detail and it serves no other purpose. I mean, it's such a neat little thing to bother to animate.
Hey, you know what? In true anime fashion, later on, she might be like, you know, I was taking it easy on you. I was using my right hand. And she switches to the left.
Oh, in a complete Princess Bride moment. I have something to tell you that may surprise you. What's that? I am not left-handed. I have something to tell you, too. What's that? I'm not left-handed either. Bahaha!
Oh, man. But, you know, and then if you look at the other teams, you don't get to see their weapons all too much because you don't see a lot of those other teams in Season 2. Because in Season 1, it was them trying to find their place and get, you know, separated out into the school, so you got to actually hang out with a lot of those guys more in their progress to getting the pieces and making their way through the forest. But you have Jean, who is typical sword and board.
But you know that sword's gonna do something cool later.
Yeah. God, I mean, it's got to.
Other it's than so growing bigger to. And smaller, hey, does that get lighter? No. Like, we don't know what... It was his granddad's sword, and... His granddad has got to be somebody special if he can get into the school beacon. So that sword's going to do something awesome, I hope.
Yeah, because you know, he talks about how his father and his grandfather both were heroes, and he wanted to be like them because, you know, a little bit of a spoiler, his background is he basically took this sword and snuck into school. He basically wanted to be a hero so bad, he lied and forged paperwork to get in here. And thus far, yeah, he started out as more of one of probably the weakest of the characters, but now he's developed into an actually really strong leader. And in fact, if you watch the season one finale fight against the Scorpion, he orchestrates that final attack. He's basically the one leading and pointing out what to do. And it's pretty impressive, even though he's a bumbling, kind of funny guy.
He's growing up, though. Most of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you see it again in season two, for the most part, throughout. Like, he's nowhere near as bumbling and clumsy. He's still bumbling and clumsy a bit, but he's definitely matured throughout the entire show, which is pretty impressive, because in stuff like this, normally you don't get that type of growth in characters that you can just notice and go, oh, he's absolutely different from what he was when we first met him.
And what I'm noticing also is that many of these weapons, they all have special names.
Oh, yeah.
And there's one weapon we've seen and we don't know, but we all want to know what it is. And
oh, buddy
Coco's
girl.
Handbag. That's right. You've been working on that all semester. Save it.
I'm just like, oh, what, like, what does she got? Like a hydrogen bomb in there? Because I'm just like, oh man, like, and you know what? Kudos to Rooster Teeth for not blowing that just yet, because we've seen her get picked on between these two seasons a whole lot, and it would have been well within their rights to let her break bad in that scene. But she's the only one from Team Coffee that does not.
Yeah.
Only one.
Here's something I'll mention. We'll get to this now before we run out of time later. But, okay, it's safe to say we all love this show.
Yes.
I'd like to go one by one and say, is there anything about this show that we don't like? Like okay, we filled the pros column. Let's go to the cons column.
There's not more of it.
There is that. Well, at least they fixed the inconsistent run times in season one and season two. We're getting a pretty solid 12 to 13 minutes. I could definitely do with, you know, 4 dozen more episodes right now, but there is that. Jason?
And they also, one problem with the first season was you didn't know anything about the world. You didn't know really why they were fighting, why they were going to these special schools. And they interstilled in between sections of this second season with those little vignettes that were only about a minute or 2 minute, maybe 3 minute long.
That helped fill in the story.
Yes, and explained a lot about the stuff going on. Because, you know, we find out that, you know, they're stealing the dust or whatever a little bit in the first season and more in this season, the second season. And those vignettes fill in why that stuff's so important and what it does. And it gives you a lot more of that universe. So you get more feeling behind everything, which is great. I think probably my biggest and only issue with the show is actually with just season two is because we didn't get that same variety of the cast members that we did in season one. We really focused mainly on Team Ruby, and you had Team Juniper featured slightly slightly in certain scenes or certain episodes, you know, but for the most part it really was the Ruby, Weiss, Blake and Yang show. And they're the title characters, that's fine. But they've done such a good job at creating such vibrant, likable characters. Like, I'm sorry, freaking Nora? Can I please get more of Nora causing terrible, terrible issues for Lee?
While like, giggling.
While giggling the whole time. Like, prime example, when Lee and John are talking about what to do about Pyrrha and Weiss. Yeah, Ren, I'm sorry. Well, his name's Lee Ren.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure I knew who you were talking about.
Yeah. When they were talking about Weiss, because Jean had a crush on Weiss and wanted to ask her to the dance, and he's having this conversation, and Nora's sitting there just listening, and he's like, you were supposed to have your headphones on. And, like, it was just such a great scene, because she's just sitting there so enthralled in this conversation. And it's just this little thing that she's there, sitting there, listening. And it's great. Like, it just amused me in quite a lot with her. And plus, she's a...
Yang!
She has a freaking hammer that turned into a grenade launcher.
I'm queen of the castle. I'm queen of the castle.
Nora!
And that she's also able to stand on the hammer and use the recoil of the grenade launcher to fly into combat.
Yes.
You know, of course, she's sitting on the hammer side saddle, flying through the air, and as she goes by the camera,
I love how Nora is the giggly girl, the girl who loves pink. Her grenades have hearts on them, little pink hearts, okay? And I love that because, well, number one, she's fueled by sugar, and that's amazing. I especially love that scene where they've got to collect the syrup and she just keeps drinking it all. She's totally giggly. You think she's not paying attention and she's, you know, doesn't have it all there, but she understands every situation, especially that whole love triangle thing. You know, she's like, why isn't Jean going for Pyrrha? And
I think she's the audience's slap. Like, she's the slap that the entire audience wants to give Jean.
But she's totally brutal in combat.
But with, you know, the grenade launcher sledgehammer that she's got, to use a gaming term, like, she is the party's burst DPS.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
And she's like, really good at it. And it's the fact that it's coming from this giggly girl just throws, because normally the burst DPS hammer wielder is the giant ox dude.
Which is definitely not coming from this girl.
The opposite.
Yeah, it's this tiny little dainty girl who's full of giggles and pink fluff, and you're just like, no, is, no. And every time you're like, no, she hits something else with a hammer.
I still don't think that's what a sloth sounds like.
So I'll talk about what I don't like about this series. And it has to do with the quality of some of the voice acting. That at the beginning, you know, they picked members of their staff who did the best that they could, and there's some breakout stars, I have to say, in the voice acting. She changed her last name, I don't know the new one, but Lindsay Tuggy, the voice of Ruby.
Isn't it Lindsay Jones? I'll find out.
Anyway, does such a good job as Ruby, and you know, she's really maturing into the role, and the quality of the voice acting is getting better. But Monty has a thing for cosplayers, and he meets them at cons, and he's invited a lot of, yeah, it is Lindsay Jones, he has invited a lot of famous cosplayers to come onto the show and do motion capture work for some of the characters, which really helps the animation. I have to say that he says that I read an interview where they're saying that they're not using any mocap for the combat scenes because a punch is a punch, a kick is a kick, and an animator can do that on his own. But for simple things like the way that they walk or the way that they dance or just the simple interactions, like when they, you know, they're brushing against each other in conversation, they use the motion capture for that. And having these really professional cosplayers do that motion capture is awesome, because nobody can do a model walk or, you know, okay, you're the hot girl, walk through this bar where you want everyone to look at you. Nobody can do that better than a grade one cosplayer, because it's exactly what they do.
Well, and the other thing is, all of these characters wear impractical shoes. I mean, in reality...
Except Weiss.
Yeah, Weiss has some pretty awesome ones, actually. But in reality, you're not going to run into battle with 3-inch heels. But cosplayers do that.
Unless you're Cinder, and then you're just going to strut your stuff all over this show.
Yes, but cosplayers do that, and many of the characters in this do that. So having cosplayers walk around in those kinds of shoes,
They're
because you walk very differently when you're on heels as to when you're wearing sensible shoes.
But to finish my point, these cosplayers are fantastic motion capture artists, and they are fantastic cosplayers, and I'm not taking away anything from them, except for the fact that they're not trained voice actors.
Yeah.
And the opening of season 2 in the bookshop with the girl whose name I forget there.
Mercury's one of them.
The two villains.
Yeah. The other girl and, you know, Cinder and a couple of the other ones. I find the voices...
Emerald.
I find that their voices fall a little flat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the quality of the voice acting is there. I mean, I could only imagine, and, you know, everyone imagine with me now, what would this show be like if they had the voice acting budget and talent of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I hear the voice acting on that show is really good. I've never watched an episode. I read part of a review online. But, you know...
Yeah, and you never did a two-part episode about it.
Absolutely not.
Never.
I never did a two-part episode of Epic on why I really like My Little Pony. But could you imagine, like, Tara Strong and all the other ones doing voice on this? Oh, man. And the budget? Oh, can you imagine if Ruby had the budget of My Little Pony?
Well, here's the thing. You've got Christina V and Tara Strong, and we'll just... I'll put it out here now because you can look it up. Tara Strong, if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure I'm right, was also Bubbles from the Powerpuff Girls.
Yep, I think
so. And so there's your Nora right there. Like, hands down, there's your Nora right there.
Mm.
It basically writes itself. And if you want a character who is goofy and just... over the top at times, but then can be serious, that's your Sonny Strait, and you got Jean. I mean, Sonny Strait did Krillin from Dragon Ball Z. He did Colonel Mace Hughes from Full Metal Alchemist. He does Usopp from One Piece. I mean, there you go. That's your guy. And you want, you know, you like for your bigger, tougher characters, you've got people like Richard Epcar, freaking square jawed, deep voice vibrato having voice actors.
Well, you could do him for what's his name? The professor.
Which professor?
The guy with the glasses who's trying to do that. He's trying to do Shinji's dad from Evangelion in every scene. I mean, the little glasses, and he's constantly sipping that coffee. Oh, I mean, is that not? I can't remember the name of the character, but it's Shinji's dad from Evangelion down to a T.
Yeah, it's Professor Ublek or something like that.
No, Ublek is somebody else.
Ublek. Let's see. His weapon is a coffee thermos.
No.
It's Ospin. It's Ospin.
Ospin.
Headmaster.
The headmaster.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. The other professor with the glasses is Bartholomew. He's the one who's always drinking coffee and he's like super hyper.
Yes. And his weapon is a coffee thermos, which just made me think of the coffee thermos in Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, yeah.
So you know when he wants to mellow out, it's not coffee in there.
No, the coffee thermos baseball bat that he then uses to propel a rocket propelled dog
at
bad guy robots. Zwei. I mean, is there no better corgi on Earth than Zwei? But to then use him as a rocket propelled grenade? Huh?
Zwei is amazing. He is Ruby's dog. Like, there's no other dog for Ruby. And he took out a mech, no less. Like,
and he's totally self-sufficient. Like, he is his own fighter.
Oh, absolutely.
It is one of the few times adding a dog to the story actually worked.
It's Zwei!
Well, if you go back and watch when he launches into battle, it is the stereotypical Japanese, like, super robot Sentai show where it's got the crazy silver background speed lines and he's just flying into combat like this super dog, and then of course
with a huge smile on his face.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And then he becomes a super dog, defeats a mech, and simply just walks off like, eh, it's whatever.
I love that so much.
So, oh, that dog is so good.
This has got to be on my top 5, top 3 list of animes. I am really excited about this show. I think that everyone should be watching it. If you haven't watched it and you're still listening, go and watch it. We haven't spoiled anything for you, because even hearing about the story elements, I don't think would ruin the viewing experience.
Yeah, and don't listen to the haters. I know, as a fan of anime, and a huge fan of anime and self-proclaimed otaku, a lot of anime fans really get down on this show because they think they're trying to copy something unique to anime. And let me tell you, animes, the tropes and the things that they do, the sight gags, they're not unique. If you go back and watch old Hanna-Barbera cartoons and Warner Brothers stuff, it's all there. It's all in there. I mean, even the super deformed eyes and the you know, the super crazy over-the-top reactions and everything. It's all in there. The only difference is that when it came to anime, they pushed it further. They made it even more ridiculous.
Well, the thing is, when they do these references in Ruby, they're not trying to steal anything. They're trying to reference it. You know, they're trying to pay tribute to what came before.
Absolutely. It's definitely an homage. This is probably, up until this show came out, Red versus Blue was probably my favorite Rooster Teeth franchise, and this immediately stole that spot. Like, it's a very heartfelt homage to anime. It's a heartfelt homage to a lot of things. Like, again, references to the martial arts movies. Shaw Brothers stuff. I mean, it's totally this. It's a definite love letter to the things that influenced when he decided to make this show.
Another thing I'll say now is that what Monty Uma said is that there will be absolutely no fan service in this show. So even though it does have a bunch of, you know, really hot and cute anime girls in it, if it's the sort of thing that turns you off, that you're like, oh, is it going to be like a bunch of like panty shots and stupid pervert jokes? And no, there's none of that whatsoever in any way, and that they all of the scenes are constructed and shot in such a way that there will be absolutely no fan service. It's not about, you know, it's not porn. It's not going to be porn. It's never going to be looked at like porn. It's not that type of show. It is very, very PG.
And it's yeah. And there are girls in the show that have dresses that show cleavage. I know Yang, basically she is, her outfit allows her to have cleavage. She has short shorts, but it's all tasteful. None of it is done to be titillating. None of it is done to be sexualized or highly emphasized. Even Cinder comes off to me as a femme fatale straight out of the 1920s.
Oh yeah, she's the total bombshell that, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, the set of gams that walked into my office and I knew I was in trouble.
Yeah, and you know, look at the headmistress of the school. She's the same way, except she comes off in that very restrained, controlled, and refined, sort of dignified way. Like, I can get really pissed, but I'm a lady, so I'm going to restrain from beating the living crap out of you.
Glenda Goodwitch, and in my ideal casting, her voice is done by Tress McNeil, and she's doing the voice of Mom, the head of the Friendly Robot Company from Futurama.
Okay, so we've gushed about this, and there's a couple of things that I want to do before we wrap this up. I want to, number one, talk about how this show, before season one even dropped, we saw people cosplaying as these characters.
Oh, yeah.
And every character in this show gives awesome opportunities for cosplaying, cross-playing, and all sorts of things. And honestly, some of those clothes, like, I want Ruby's jammies. I want to wear those jammies to bed every night. What, Rooster Teeth, why can't I buy those?
Especially that little tank top with the bear, the growly bear heart, yeah, face on
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. And then,
and again,
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, and again, we were talking about how classy this show is. There was so many chances where they could have done some crazy fan service, especially with the fact that this is a dormitory of a college, basically, and there's four girls in a room, but none of that happened.
Nope.
And you also have, there's so much merchandising you could do. I'm sorry, they could totally make a line of toys based off just the weapons.
Oh yeah,
just the weapons. I totally buy Jean's sword. I totally buy it.
Even if it didn't get lighter when it collapsed. Actually, exactly. I don't want it to.
Could I get the Crescent Rose deployable scythe Nerf gun?
Oh, that would be fun. Or even just a replica hanging on your wall. Now, speaking of that, we ran into some great cosplayers at Anna Maritime that had the weapons. You know, they had created their own. And I've seen some pretty amazing cosplayers come up with replica weapons.
Yeah, there was one on... There was one on DeviantArt, I think it was, back when the first season aired, that I found, and I put it on my podcast page, but I can't remember exactly where I got it from, and it was actually showing you how a guy made Ruby's weapon.
Ooh, you'll have to send me that link. That sounds good.
And it was pretty awesome. But you know,
I haven't seen it yet, but I want to see a cosplayer with turkey gauntlets.
You know, it's fine. It's, you know, turkey gauntlets... Watermelon hammer, it's fine.
So, who would each of you cosplay as? Cosplay if you'd like.
I would really like to be, if I could find a way to make the armor, I would like to do Jean, just because it's a hoodie, jeans, and then the armor strapped on over top, and I think that'd be a fun sort of a walking around sort of a costume to do. I wouldn't wear a blonde wig or anything like that. I'd just be dressed as Jean. I think it would do well. But if I'm going to crossplay, because I am a rapier fighter. I do fence. I would like to do Weiss, but I can't pull off those boots. I don't have the legs for it, so I'd have to do Ruby.
Well, you can crossplay it, so you can wear the boots without the skirt.
Well, yeah, but
turn it into male uniform.
They're 4-inch wedge boots that go up to her knees. I can't pull that off.
You don't have to make them wedge boots.
I mean, they will make my butt look amazing, but there's no way I could walk around all day at a con wearing that.
Oh, man.
I don't think many women can walk around all day at a con in those heels. Like, I'm just saying.
One of the few cosplayers that will not do fancy shoes. Oh, I do just sensible shoes.
Jason, I would love to see you in Weiss's boots if they made them in your size.
No, first off, I'm 6'3 already. I'd be damn near 7 foot. My center of balance would be shot. But, you know, we're talking about cosplay. I definitely think mine is a toss-up between Yasuhashi and my main man in the bowler hat.
Roman.
It is a toss-up between Roman because he is dapperly dressed, and he also has a cane gun.
The cane gun is pretty cool.
It has no other purpose other than to be a cane gun. Didn't even have a sword.
Did you get the reference in his costume as to what he's dressed like?
He reminds me of the Riddler, though. He reminds me definitely of a
Bowler and the way he carries himself. But the outfit he's wearing is almost 100%. The outfit of Andy from A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, it's Alex.
Alex, you're right.
And he even has the hair. Oh, man. How did I notice it?
It's not exactly, but I mean, that was the first thing I thought of when I saw him. I'm like, oh, nice Clockwork Orange reference.
Yeah, and then Yasuhashi, I just think he looks super cool. He's got the, he was the last member of Team... Yeah, he's the last member of Team Coffee.
Is that the guy with those blades on his forearms?
No. He's the one with the huge sword that looks like Arn from Final Fantasy X.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and he's got the awesome pale green armor, and it's the one that's stylized. It's got the one sleeve that's got the plate armor on it, and then the other arm's free so he can use his sword.
The guy with the blade forearms, did you see Blue Seed?
I own Blue Seed, actually.
Okay, so the green dude in the red trench coat, whose name I can't remember, who was saving the girl at all times, is that the reference?
You know, it could be, because his name is Fox, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, his name's Fox, and they say he's human, but he's got completely whited out eyes, and then he has those awesome bladed weapons.
Yeah. Which is that, it reminds me a lot of that dude from Blue Seed, which is a very old, very sort of obscure, let's say, anime?
Well, Blue Seed, I think it might have got a limited run on Cartoon Network back in the heyday of Toonami. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, that was a very, you would have had to go looking for that show if you wanted to watch it.
And your crossplay?
You know, I definitely would have to say, because if you could bring her to life, I definitely think she'd be a 6 foot plus woman. I would definitely say Pyrrha.
What?
How did you?
Well, Ruby has her speed. You have your glyphs. My semblance is polarity.
You can control poles.
No, you dunce. It means she has control over magnetism.
Magnets are cool, too.
Because she's got the classic Roman, you know, Centaurian armor. She's got the spear that turns into a rifle. Super cool. She has, you know, a shield as well. Like, I really like her character. Definitely gives me a very, feel kind of have that Xena vibe.
Yeah,
almost.
She's definitely an Amazon.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, she'd definitely be statuesque.
I still think you could pull off Cinder's dress, though.
I don't have the legs for it. I got the butt. I don't have the legs.
So I think for me, I would love there. I'd love to dress as almost anybody, but I think Professor Goodwitch, just because I think she is so fantastic, and when she fights, I mean, she is powerful and destructive, but at the same time, she puts stuff back together.
Yeah, so after the massive food fight, when she walks in and cleans up the whole place with a flick of her wand and goes, "Children, don't throw your food!"
Yeah, and her weapon's a riding crop. And then she does the same thing to the streets when, in the last episode, she puts things back together, which is just fantastic. And for crossplay, I think I'd have to do Jean simply because he'd be the most fun to play as.
And technically, if you're going to crossplay Jean, you could totally do the dress scene from.
Oh, that would be so much fun!
And get you and a few friends together, and you could get that dance routine going.
Oh yeah,
have you seen me dance?
Hey,
You see them dance?
Exactly. I was just about to say the same thing.
So the next thing I want to talk about is this series sparked fan fiction so quickly. And Tech, do you want to tell us a little bit about the fan fiction?
I haven't read a single bit of it, so I'm pretty sure it's interesting.
So be cool, okay? You're going to be cool, right?
Dude.
Good point.
I have found doing a bit of research looking up fan fiction and stuff that the fans have completely run away with fantasy pairings of the various characters and, you know, romantic entanglements and little stories.
Isn't that how all fan fiction is, though?
Absolutely. I think my favorite of them all is the names they've come up with. So they have one they call the Winter Rose or the White Rose, which is Weiss and Ruby, paired as a couple. And the other one is Black Sun, which is Yang and Blake together as a couple.
Well, and one of the things that I found really neat was how much, as they call it, cuddle fiction there is out there. it's not slash, because they're not doing anything sexual, but it's all cuddle and being supportive. And
I have to tell you, I was surprised, and you know, not because I was looking for it. Okay, fine, I was looking for it. How absolutely no sexual fanfic could I find? I'm sure it's out there, and somebody's going to prove me wrong and send me all kinds of dirty porn. And don't do that, please do that. it was nowhere. You know, you look up, like, Sailor Moon fanfic and then close your eyes and burn your internet after you know what pops up. But there's not a stitch of this stuff to be found on mainstream sites. It's all very PG, just like the show, and that the fans seem to be running in the same direction as the show is. I don't know if that speaks to the genius of the creators or, you know, something about the way the show is structured that... But I don't know. It's refreshing. It's nice. It's cool.
Well, I mean, take a look at, again, you have, I said there was only one, but there is two, although it's really played up for comedy, which is Nora's crush on Rin and the relationship, the budding relationship between Pyrrha and Jean. And that was one of my biggest complaints, is that for the first season and a half, Jean was so caught up on Weiss. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because Weiss is a great character.
Hey there, Snow Angel.
Oh, man. So smooth. So smooth.
They show the growth of Jean in the opening credits of the two seasons. Watch them back to back, and you'll see in the beginning, in season one, Pyrrha has her hand on Jean's shoulder. She's the one supporting him. In season two, he's got his hand on her shoulder. And she looks back at him, and he's supporting her.
And that's really really, really great, because in season one, he gets the quick lesson about how to use his spiritual energy and draw on the dust and all that stuff in the cave that gets them in trouble with the scorpion, giant demon scorpion. And you can tell there at first that Pyrrha really kind of feels sorry for him, and she wants... She's infatuated, and she kind of has that crush, but it's definitely not anywhere near as developed as it becomes in season two, where she actually, at one point, is basically ready and willing to ask him to go to the dance with her, and wants to go to the dance with him, and thinks he's going to ask her, and he comes to her because she's been such a supportive friend to him about what to do about Weiss. And it's so gut-wrenching for me to watch her swallow her pride. She doesn't get angry. Well, she does have a really freak out, but it's great. It's done really, really well. But
and the fact that, you know, these are superheroes that are training to fight mythical monsters to save the Earth, but homeboy still can't see that the girl... You know,
he can't see the forest.
Completely ignoring this girl to go after another one, and he's missing all the obvious signs of a crush. And they're having problems at a dance because nobody wants to dance. And is she gonna ask me out? And it's high school BS drama,
yeah,
with guns and swords.
Yeah, and it's not done in that insane melodramatic way that you get typically with a lot of anime or a lot of American teen shows. It's done just enough so you're like, come on. you gotta see this, right? But they give you a whole lot of hope at the end of that whole thing, because he goes through a lot to try to impress and get Weiss's attention, but nothing he does is as tender or caring as what he does for Pyrrha. And it's pretty fantastic. He even sends one of the two Haven students, the one that Weiss actually likes, he actually gives him the speech that the audience is giving him about going up and talking to her and quit being an idiot. But we're paid off for that, because he does the really, really sweet dance thing with the dress and everything. And it's great. And you're like, he's totally making a fool of himself. And yeah, he totally is making a fool of himself, because no one else at that party knew what in the world he was doing.
No, but he became the life of the party.
Yeah. Exactly. And and Pyrrha knew what it meant.
And it also shows how much growth he has from season one, because season one, he never would have done something like that. He was so awkward, so nervous, so afraid.
Well, at the end of the first episode, he was known as Vomit Boy.
Yeah.
His only friend was Ruby, and no one wanted Ruby because Ruby was the klutzy, hyperactive girl with the giant scythe and love of violence.
You'll be the bee's knees. I don't want to be a bee. I want to be a normal girl with normal knees.
Normal knees.
That just talks about how, or just shows how every one of these characters are fully thought out and three-dimensional. Like, I can't really think of many characters that don't have depth. I mean, even the robot has depth and mystery and intrigue, you know?
She's so cool.
Yes, I love Penny. Go ahead.
I'll start with mine first, but if you could distill the whole show down to 30 seconds, what would be your absolutely favorite scene? And mine is from season one. It's when they get ejected off the cliff into the forest and they have to use their techniques to land. And John is on the platform going, so techniques, so there's like a landing pad or something? No. You're going to give us like a parachute? No, you'll have to land on your own. Yeah, but what does that mean? Ah! And then he flies off. Everybody else has landed. He is flying through the air. Pyrrha sees him flying, takes out her spear, and throws the spear off camera. And you hear, and if you have to listen very, very carefully with the volume up, but you'll hear, thank you.
I'm sorry.
Dude, I love that so much.
That's such a good scene.
Especially because it's the big cartoony thwack boing noise.
Yeah, it's basically, that's the start of their relationship. Like, she sees him earlier and gets the googly eyes, but up until that point, they really don't have any interaction. So, I think if I could boil it down, I think I would definitely have to say that it would be centered around Jean when the final battle of season one happens and they're all fighting these monsters separately and they're losing. They're getting their butts kicked. Like they're not really not getting any ground. They're losing it. And Jean rallies them up and helps formulate and creates that plan that gets them to be able to defeat all these monsters. And it's even to the point where the way they defeat the scorpion is actually a combined attack with Team Juniper and Team Ruby. And that's really, I really, really like that scene. It just gives me hope for how this story is going to finish out. And it also shows how well, because, you know, as a character, he definitely does not have the confidence in himself. But we as viewers see what, you know, the instructors and the headmaster of the school sees. And also what Pyrrha sees. Exactly, what Pyrrha sees. And I really like that. And I think, plus, because it's such a powerful scene that does not directly focus on Ruby, Weiss, Blake, or Yang, it gives you a taste of the fact that the guys at Rooster Teeth definitely know how to orchestrate a bunch of different characters and make them super interesting.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I would pick as my all-time fave. I mean, there's so many good scenes. I think the opening scene with Ruby fighting Roman's guys in the dust shop is a big contender, as is the whole food fight scene is a big contender.
Justice will be swift! Justice will be painful! It will be delicious! Yeah!
Yang returning to the nightclub. I mean, there's so many great scenes.
The DJ, the song... The entry song from her demo reel is skipping in the background because the DJ is hiding. You just see his hand go up over the edge of the turntable and, like, take the needle off.
And he's a clear reference to Dead Mouse. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just fantastic.
Yeah, but instead of the mouse head, it's a big teddy bear head.
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to choose. But, yeah, it's got to be one of those. So, before we go, I want to ask, do you have any predictions for Season 3 and any speculation on any of the things that we don't know, the mysteries, the secrets, what have you?
I think that they mentioned it at the beginning of Season 2, all of the things that were going on, you know, the exchange students and everything else, and the flow of their semester of school gets interrupted by the, you know, the big monsters, and then the whole, you know, Season 2 happens. But they did mention that there's going to be a tournament. So my prediction is that Season 3, at least partially, will revolve around this tournament, where we might get to see Juniper versus Ruby and all these other things in like a crazy sort of melee. As for the mysteries, I think we will finally get to see who Ruby and Yang's father is. Because there's a hint that he's something special, and I can't wait to meet him if that's his daughter's.
Mm-hmm. I think, see, my prediction actually ties into a character I completely forgot about, and I would totally cosplay this guy, is Adam Taurus. You only see him twice. Once in Blake's... trailer, and in towards the end of Season 2. Matter of fact, I think it's the last episode you see him, and he's the guy wearing the mask that is reminiscent of a bird's beak, and he has the awesome
He's Beast.
Yeah, he's got the rose colored emblem, the rose emblem on the back of his jacket, and he has that awesome sword, and in the trailer he's the one that cuts the train in half. I really, really want to see how he plays out with Blake's story. And I definitely think it's going to be either something to the extent of a tortured romance, like something they both want, but their directions and their passions pull them apart. Or it's going to be more of a fatherly thing, where he brought her up through the ranks of the White Fang and thought she would have been his, successor, the one to lead the White Fang against their oppressors, but she decided to take another route, and he feels betrayed in a way. And it's already been shown that Blake feels that the White Fang has gone against everything that she felt they stood for, and she's been very tormented by that. And I think that they did a really good job in the show showing how much this bothers her. Not only is it because she's a Faunus, but also because she was staying up late, she was stressing herself over it. And I mean, they even changed her character design a little bit and gave her bags under the eyes, and she looked a lot more haggard and so forth. So I really want to see how that culminates. And they've already basically spelled out how Yang's story is going to turn in this next season with the spoiler, or not the teaser, after the credits of the season finale of Season 2. So that one is, that's just, I'm pretty sure that's going to happen in the first couple of episodes, but I definitely think Blake's story is going to progress a lot more throughout Season 3.
Yeah, I want to see more about Yang and her mother. I am probably with a lot of other people in thinking that woman that saved her from Neapolitan was her mother, possibly. I suspect that Roman being imprisoned in that big robot thing or whatever is part of the plan. that he was supposed to be captured at one point. I do think that Sindri's plans have changed because everything started earlier. But yeah, I foresee a lot more team action, or at least I hope for it. And that's what I think, you know, I agree with both of your predictions, actually. I think season 3 is going to have a lot to show us, and I don't know if they're going to be able to do it all in one season.
Do you think maybe instead of trying to do it in a single season with the 12 to 13 minute episodes, you think we'll actually get full 20 to 24 minute episodes this time? That way they can fill in more of the story. Or do you think they're going to give us a double size season? Maybe do a season 3 part 1 and part 2.
I don't know. I don't think that we're going to get longer episodes. I think you know, the 10 to 15 minute mark is pretty much as good as we're going
to
get.
The thing also with if you go to a 24 minute episode, usually that means you've got an A plot and a B plot, so they end up being two 12 minute episodes anyways.
Yeah.
So keeping them separated, I don't see that as a big deal. I think the 12 to 15 minute runtime is fine, especially for those of us in the ADHD category. it's great. I want to see more than 12 episodes, but, you know, I understand, you know, I don't know, Rooster Teeth is exploding. They have so much on their plate. They've got that new something in Vav. They've got that new series launching this month.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, 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 the two superhero guys.
Exactly. They've got...
Was it X-Ray and Vav? X-Ray and Vav?
X-Ray and Vav, that's it. Plus, they've got, you know, all the Achievement Hunter stuff, and Red versus Blue is still growing strong, and...
And hey, Red vs. Blue is probably going to get far more support because they've got the Master Chief Collection coming out, and then Halo 5 is on the horizon coming up.
I just hope that they're able to keep up the momentum of the creativity and the rich storylines and the rich characters. Since it's animation, you don't have to worry about anybody aging, and I would be fine watching this for like another 10 seasons or more.
I'm in.
Well, dude, I absolutely agree with you guys. I definitely think, you know, I wouldn't even be upset because you know how some shows, a lot of anime does this a lot, is they'll give you a season or a part of season of filler where it doesn't focus on the main characters. But I think Rooster Teeth has done such a good job with developing these secondary characters that I wouldn't feel cheated at all if we got an entire Team Juniper season or a part of a season.
If there was an episode that was entirely devoted to the new team, Team Coffee, and we get to learn who they are for an episode, it wouldn't be, oh man, I wanted to know what happened in the main storyline. It'd be, all right, finally, an episode about coffee. Woohoo!
Exactly.
Ooh, I mean, what's in that box?
Yeah, exactly.
I hate filler episodes normally in shows. And I think the fact that this is airing on the internet, it's a completely different model. They don't have to worry about fitting ads in. They don't have to worry about filling out a full season. I mean, a lot of shows on TV, they lack something because they have to show more than their story. They have to fill the 24-episode slot. Even though things are changing a bit now, but this internet model seems to work great because they can tell their story for as long as it needs to go or as short as it needs to go. And I'm really happy with that. And I like how there's season arcs. And, you know, I think that this model makes it possible for Ruby to be as good as it is.
Mm.
That if this had to go on a TV station, it would end up being like Gossip Girl, you know?
Ruby, brought to you by Nissan. You know, there's like a Versa in every shot, a la
exactly,
Heroes or whatever.
Yeah.
I'll tell you one thing I want to see, though, because, you know, Rooster Teeth is self-referential and they put in little things throughout. Can I get like a shelf in their bedroom where they got like a little Master Chief doll on the shelf? Or I was telling Jason this earlier. Wouldn't it be great if there was an episode where they had like one of the team members at the tournament or whatever voiced by the guy that does Rage Quit? Something else that I will say in season 2, thank you very much to Rooster Teeth for not only encouraging your fans not only encouraging your fans, but rewarding their support. So there's a lot of TV shows and books and things out there where they don't want fan fiction, they don't want fan art, and
some go out of their way to squash these websites,
right, to put out cease and desist letters for people who are enjoying the fandom. But the fact that every episode of season 2, while the credits roll, it's a piece of hand-drawn fan art.
And I love that.
Yeah, that they are, you know, they're rewarding their hardcore fans by actually making them part of the canon and part of the show. And, you know, congratulations to Rooster Teeth for doing that. Congratulations to all the fans who get their art even considered by the creators for this. I mean, well done to everyone.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think they, you know, Rooster Teeth, the guys at Rooster Teeth aren't dumb. They know their audience, and they know the circles their audience runs in. So they know a lot of the YouTube guys, a lot of the podcaster guys, a lot of the blog guys. They do also art, and they also do, you know, fan fiction and so forth like that. And they know if you isolate them or you ostracize them in any kind of way, you'll lose your audience. And here's the thing. If you let people write about your show, typically, when your show comes out on Blu-ray and you want to pump up your sales and have them buy it, they will, because they're like, hey, these guys at Rooster Teeth, they're pretty cool. They had my buddy's art on there. Or, hey, you know, they let me and some guys make a huge, you know, 12-month long blog post where we did this back and forth story about their characters, and they didn't, you know, Walt Disney us or something.
Well, I think the core of the matter is that the people who are making Ruby and the people who are working at Rooster Teeth are fans first.
Yeah.
These are fans that went out there. I mean, Red versus Blue, major fans of the Halo series, so they made a series around it. You know, I mean, these are people
and they were
that
featured. They were featured in Halo 2, by the way.
Yeah.
Were they really?
Yes, in Halo 2, there's a mission where you're inside of a base. You have to go down these long hallways. If you go down to one end of this long hallway, you find a guy yelling at another guy through a door to open up. And he's like, well, how do I know that you're so-and-so and you're not just someone else trying to lie and get me to open the door so you can shoot me? And it's the Rooster Teeth guys. And they did a huge dialogue of it. And it's super hilarious. It goes on for ever, and it's really, really great.
So these guys are fans, and so they're not going to squash or step on any toes of actual fans out there. I mean, they built their empire on it, and more we're starting to see this. We're starting to see creators who are fans and are just like, yeah, have the stuff, you know, write fan fiction. I'm more than happy for you to
well,
do
look
that.
Look at how successful Marvel is.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. And but I think that's also why Ruby is so good, because he is a fan of anime and he was able to incorporate all of that. When we have fans making content for us, we get content that us geeky fans are going to love. So it's a great relationship.
You know, it's funny. We're talking about this. Nintendo actually just came out and at a press conference where they were talking about stuff they're doing and whatnot, and they told their fans that they can now make fan-created stuff with Mario, with their characters. So cool. Now you can have these little fan-made games and fan-made shorts and fan-made stuff. It's now endorsed by Nintendo.
Awesome.
So everything under the Nintendo label can now be used by fans to make fan stuff. So And I think basically they're saying, hey, you know, don't try to become a millionaire off of it. Go ahead, have fun, and use the stuff that we've given you that you enjoyed for so many years and make awesome stuff. And, you know, we're not going to be like, cease and desist, blah, 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 blah. And I thought that was super great from Nintendo's standpoint. I thought that was super great, especially coming from Japan, where they are very concerned with piracy and the downloading of stuff and copyright and whatnot, although their copyright laws are weird compared to ours. So I thought that was really impressive from Nintendo, in fact.
Oh, what was that game? One of the little phone games, one of the really popular ones where the makers then went out and sued everyone that had like the word. Was it Jewel or Quest or anyway? It had like a normal English word, and if your game had that word in the title, well, you were infringing on their copyright, and they were cease and desisting your game to protect their little iOS thing. Anyway, it's nice to see that while this copyright stupidity is going on, that other companies are throwing the doors wide open and saying, no, go and create. And if you make a little flashgram on Newgrounds with a question mark block in it, you know, Nintendo's fleet of lawyers are not going to pop out of a green pipe on your front lawn and completely destroy you. Because that is how Nintendo lawyers travel, isn't it?
I think so.
Either that or by airship with cannons.
But you know what? They're a lot nicer and cuddlier than the Disney lawyers.
Whew, you ain't kidding.
So we're going to wrap this up. And what I would like is for everyone to throw out one of your favorite lines from the series as you say goodbye.
Boop. I don't think that's what a sloth sounds like. Or or another great one would be Swy, which is my favorite. But anyway, yeah, this is Tech at the Clock Doc signing off. Thank you very much. It's been a great show. We should talk about more stuff like this more often.
I'm Jason of the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Nerdy to Me Podcast. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/nerdytome. And you can find us on our new website that Nutty helped me make, talknerdytomepodcast.com. And that's with the number 2. And I will just have to say, oh great, it's Vomit Boy. By the way, he's listed on the wiki as having 2 nicknames, Vomit Boy and Johnny Boy.
Nice. And this has been Nuke Joss, and the host of the Nutty Bites podcast. And you can find all things Nuke Joss at nimlas.org, NIMLAS.org, or find me on Twitter at Nuke Joss. Yeah, have fun spelling that. I don't need help growing up because I drink milk.
I don't need people to help me grow up. I drink milk.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, everyone. Goodbye.
Adios.
Bye-bye.
The only place you can get the new Alibi Jones Adventure is on Glow in the Dark Radio. The Solar Alliance has a new prime representative who's no friend to Alibi's family. Politics. A ghost ship has appeared out on the Depot Fringe, and public revelations of some of Alibi's past are about to blow up. Kind of like how he blew up a whole city that time. I'm author and reader Mike Luoma, bringing you new chapters free each week from the forthcoming Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest. Get episodes or subscribe on iTunes or through glowinthedarkradio.com on Facebook at /glowinthedarkradio.
Nutty Bites is produced by Nimlas Studios. You can find us at nimlas.org/blog. Contact feedback at nuttybites@nimlas.org. Call our voicemail line at 347-NUTTY-42 or 347-688-8942. This work is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported license. Basically, you can share it, you can send it around to your friends, just don't change it, don't sell it, don't try to make any money off of it, and link back to me, my site, and everything.